Argue, argue, talk, talk, talk. Exaggerate, argue, pontificate, argue, just talk, shut talk, up. Talk. Why won't you listen? Argue, why shut, won't you talk, see? I know the story, just listen to me.
You're better off when you're spouting off. And now, here's your host, Karen Cataline.
Hey, welcome to the Karen Cataline Spouting Off Show. I am Kim Munson. I am her guest host. And I'm Kim Munson with the AmeriChicks, where I dissect issues as right versus wrong instead of right versus left. Agree or disagree? Let's have a conversation. Be sure and check out my website, AmeriChicks.com. Sign up for my emails. I'll keep you apprised of all my upcoming guests, topics, and important events. Now, I know that each of us have our own style. I actually have a couple of radio shows out in the Denver market. And the one that I just described to you is where I offer a conservatarian perspective. My other radio show that I have is my World War II project. In 2016, I went to Normandy with a group that took four D-Day veterans back to Normandy for the D-Day celebrations and came back realizing that it's so important to capture these stories. So I have interviewed over 100 World War II veterans, and so you can find all of that information at my website, AmeriChicks.com. So some of the things that I talk about is when we talk about a conservatarian perspective, there's such a so many conversations out there, this narrative about socialism. And I think it's important that we push back on that. Socialism is force. And a survey showed that people really like freedom versus force. And that's really the questions that we have on the table in America today. It's freedom versus force. Or force versus freedom. It is never compassionate to take individuals' rights, property, or freedom via force, whether with a weapon, threats, taxation, or policy. But what we have seen with this narrative in America is that we have things that we think are good, that may make sense to us. We'll be talking with Heather Lauden-Parra in the second half of this hour regarding forced vaccinations of our children. It seems like a great idea to vaccinate our children against childhood diseases. But what we see the radical progressive activists that have taken over the Democrat Party, and the Democrat Party of today is not the Democrat Party of your grandma and your grandpa or of JFK. This Democrat Party has been taken over by radical progressive activists who want to use power and force to control our lives. So they find something that we have value, that we value, such as vaccinations, childhood diseases, clean air, clean water, protecting ourselves. And they take those things and they roll them up into public policy that actually takes away our freedoms and takes away our rights. And so it's important that we have conversations about that. So typically what I do on my show is I will start with something of inspiration. And another thing that I do out here in Colorado is a Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth. We are doing a study of the Federalist Papers. And last night was our Vino and Veritas in Centennial, Colorado. And so I have some quotes from Alexander Hamilton. And Hamilton said, "A well-adjusted person is one who makes the same mistake twice without getting nervous." Again, a well-adjusted person is one who makes the same mistake twice without getting nervous. And then another thing that I like to do is we all need to chuckle just a little bit. I think Americans have lost their sense of humor to some degree. And so I want to tell you a story. A friend of mine told me this story. She said she recently asked a friend's little girl what she wanted to be when she grows up. And the little girl said that she wanted to be president someday. And both of her parents, radical progressive socialists, were standing there. And so my friend asked the little girl, "If you were president, what would be the first thing that you would do?" And she replied, "I'd give food and houses to all the homeless people." And her socialist parents beamed with pride. "Wow, what a worthy goal," my friend said. "But you don't have to wait until you're president to do that. You can come over to my house, you can mow the lawn, pull the weeds, and sweep my walks, and I'll pay you $50. And then I'll take you over to the grocery store where you can buy the homeless guy who hangs out there. You can use $50 towards food and some housing." The little girl thought that over for a few seconds. Then she looked my friend straight in the eye and asked, Well, why doesn't the homeless guy just come over and do the work? You can just pay him $50. My friend said, good point. Now you understand the difference between socialism and capitalism. So we're going to go through some headlines in this first half of the show, something that I always do, and we'll try to stay on national primarily. But first of all, it is hard to believe that it was 30 years ago that we witnessed the horrific events at Tiananmen Square in China. As you remember, there were young students that were run over by tanks in Tiananmen Square. And it's important to note that those students were reading the Declaration of Independence. And so there is something so unique about this American idea. But in some ways, it seems like just yesterday, but it was 30 years ago. I did want to bring something to your attention that is happening out here in Colorado, because Colorado really is at the tip of the spear regarding all of these radical policies. The New Green Deal is actually being implemented right here in Colorado. In our last election cycle, the radical activists were elected into the House, the State House, the State Senate, and the governorship. But they never really ran on what they were going to do. And so I wanted to just let you know about something. We have, the title here is Senator John Cook here in Colorado. Governor Polis has been deliberately misreporting on air quality. He's putting politics over sound science and the rule of law. Governor Polis is inviting more stringent EPA air quality standards than are required under the Federal Clean Air Act. The new higher standards will be imposed under the EPA's serious non-attainment status as a direct result of a directive issued by the governor soon after his inauguration. The Polis administration certification for 2018 National Ambient Air Quality Standards has omitted critical scientific data that would have shown the state to be in compliance with the NAAQS. Polis directed the Air Pollution Control Division to admit available scientific evidence showing that a substantial portion of the Front Range's ground-level ozone pollution is traceable to out-of-state resources, namely the West Coast and Asian atmospheric sources. The increased ozone levels detected in Denver in the Front Range testing are demonstrably not caused by automobile emissions, which have been steadily improving in Colorado over the past decade. Yet, Governor Polis told Coloradans in his January 17th executive order that putting more electric vehicles on our highways is necessary if we want to improve air quality. And this is also following Governor Hickenlooper, who happens to be running for president. It's following Hickenlooper's policies regarding the Air Pollution Control Division, where they were preparing the state's annual certification to demonstrate that an automatic reclassification to serious non-attainment was unwarranted based on the scientific data. Polis directed the staff to halt all work involving the use of the EPA waiver available under the Federal Clean Air Act, which acknowledges the role of out-of-state sources of ground-level air pollution. Admitting the available ozone pollution data is contrary to provisions of Colorado's own Clean Air Act. This deliberate omission of readily available scientific data on statistically significant contributions by out-of-state sources of air pollution is wholly inconsistent with statutory requirements. And to put even more icing on this green cake, on January 17th, Polis signed an executive order directing the AQCC, the Air Quality Control Commission, to undertake new rulemaking to adopt the California Zero Emission Vehicle Regulations. That directive, too, may be unlawful. So what we have happening out here in Colorado, and fasten your seatbelts because this could be coming to a state near you, is the radical activists are wanting to get people out of their personal vehicles. And personal vehicles are inherent in the ability for everyday hardworking folks to go after their hopes and dreams. And so out here in Colorado, we will be working diligently to be pushing back on this overreach of government. So I thought it was important that you understand that. Let's go into some of the national articles today. And I did see earlier today on Angela Merkel had said that there are dark forces that are emanating in Europe. And I imagine this is because the European Parliament has been shaken up with the election results. This is from news.com. Half a billion Europeans have woken to a new political reality as results from the EU elections showed an end to dominance of two main political groups for the first time in history. Results show the two main groups in the 751-seat European Parliament have lost their majority, while Greens, Liberals, right-wing, and Populist parties scored huge gains. Far-right parties topped the votes in Italy, France, Britain, and Poland in the highest voter turnout in 20 years, as leaders wove a wave of anger at EU officials over immigration and economic policies. And so what we're seeing here, my friends, is I've had Nigel Farage, who was really the architect of Brexit, on my show several times, and he was an early Donald Trump supporter. And what we are seeing is that people are voting. They are saying that we want our sovereignty, that we don't want to become part of this big globalist agenda. And so Donald Trump, at this point, he's still in office, even though there are so many attacks to try to get him out of office and to undercut his policies. But he continues to go to work. We're seeing some of the lowest unemployment that we've seen for quite some time, record unemployment in some cases, or record unemployment in some cases. And then also the economy has been clicking along at the last quarter was 3.2%. And if many of you remember, Barack Obama said that a 1 to 1.5% GDP growth was the new norm. And now here we have Donald Trump, we're at 3.2%. And if in fact our economy grows, more people get back to work, our tax revenues actually go up because there's more people working. And in that case, we're working and paying taxes. And in that case, we very possibly could start to grow our way out of some of these very significant financial challenges that we have regarding the national debt. And so Donald Trump is in office. Theresa May is out as British Prime Minister. And then with these most recent elections, the European Parliament has had a real shakeup where people are saying that we are very frustrated with the loss of our sovereignty. We're very frustrated with the immigration policies that are changing the fabric of our countries. And it's very exciting to see that people are stepping up. Another headline that is most interesting is that Marcus Lemonis, who is the chairman and CEO of Camping World, is fighting a North Carolina town over their 3,200 square foot Stars and Stripes. Apparently, the town has said that they want him to not fly that big flag. And this is what he said. The flag isn't coming down. It's the only thing I know for certain. I know I'm going to die. I know I'm going to pay taxes. And I know that I'm not taking the flag down. And again, we have seen across the country more and more city councils who are using their policies to, I think, restrict freedom. This evening, again, here in Colorado, I'm going to be going up to a meeting in Erie, Colorado, for a town council meeting. A couple of weeks ago, the women of Well County, which is the Republican women's group, had made a reservation to use the town community center for their monthly meeting. And their speaker was going to be someone regarding the history of oil and gas in Well County. And Well County out here in Colorado is one of the largest oil and gas producing counties in the state. And then in addition, our state legislature, State House, State Senate, and the governor signed it into law the National Popular Vote Compact. And so there is a push out here in Colorado to get that on our ballot so that people can actually vote on that. And so there would be petition signers there as well. Well, just a couple of days before the meeting was to occur, the Erie town manager or assistant town manager pull the approval for that meeting. And my friends, this is very, very dangerous. And you were seeing cut and paste legislation regarding these kinds of policies throughout the country. Instead of city councils deliberating on these things, they're actually looking to staff, to bureaucrats, that are cutting and pasting these policies across our nation. And unfortunately, this kind of a policy goes against the inherent American idea, constitutional rights of freedom of speech and freedom of assembly. So regarding my comments tonight, I think any group should be able to use that community center. It was paid for with tax dollars. Whether or not a group is communist, socialist, Democrat, libertarian, Republican, all should be able to have the right to assemble and to meet and to talk about their important ideas. And I would recommend that each of you check and see what the policies are regarding your community centers in your particular towns. Another thing that we've seen a cut and paste on is regarding carrying firearms at these different buildings, where once again, they're letting bureaucrats make those decisions on those public buildings, which I think goes against this Second Amendment. So I think that it is really important that we continue to push back on these local laws that are really affecting our freedoms. Now, there is something that's happening in Minnesota that you all need to be aware of. And it's a discussion of expanded home visits. It's an existing program. It's called Help Me Grow. And is referring parents and children for the purpose of home visiting services. Now, again, my friends, I find it quite dangerous that what can happen is a family member, someone that, you know, a friend, it could be almost anyone, could actually refer a family to a home visit where the government is going to knock on your door and inspect your home. And they have this couched in words that people like to hear, such as help me grow. But in Minnesota Department of Education spokesperson stated that in 2018, just under 22,000 children birth through kindergarten were referred to the program because a caring adult in their lives identified a concern. That's in air quotes. That number has skyrocketed from just 533 referrals in 2010. And again, my friends, I think that we have to be very, very cautious when we start to think about government knocking on your door, inspecting your home, wanting to forcefully vaccinate your kids. Out here in Colorado, this legislature also passed a red flag bill, which in essence would allow law enforcement without due process and without a person knowing, come and knock on your door and take your firearms because someone has indicated that they think you might possibly be a danger. If someone is so dangerous that their firearms need to be taken away, instead of taking away the firearms, they really need to extricate that person from that situation, because if you don't, there's other weapons that people could use, such as your kitchen tools, your utensils, your lawn tools, car cords, all those kinds of things. And so again, what we're starting to see in all of these different states is different programs that will allow government to come in unannounced to inspect your home, to take your children. And then lastly, again, in many of these things that we're seeing is there is data collection. And regarding this Help Me Grow program in Minnesota, it says besides the referral component, the data being collected on your child is concerning. Some families may never know that their family data was ever entered into the Minnesota Department of Education website. And then the Department of Education will have information stating your child needs home visits as well as the local school district. Can you decline? And then there is an expansion. There's an ongoing effort to expand Help Me Grow to be able to connect with a wider group of families to a broad array of supports and services following the national Help Me Grow model developed by the Connecticut Children's Medical Center. And the goal is to move toward this national model while offering the child and parent more services with the obligatory required data collection. And while a parent may decline home visit services, their information has already been uploaded to the Minnesota Department of Education and local school district. And is this correct? Who else gets the information? Are the services truly necessary? Will the current developmental milestones become more rigid? Once again, children develop at different rates. Why should government be in on that? It's going to be taking away the rights of parents. And what philosophical ideas does your pediatrician hold concerning good health, as well as your child care provider in good education? And so that is important to keep an eye out no matter where you are. And then lastly, before we go to break, this is from Politico. Medicare for All backers find the biggest foe in their own backyard as hospitals threaten to derail big and small Democrat plans for coverage expansion. The multi-billion dollar industry has emerged as the most formidable foe of a single payer healthcare. It's helped assemble a coalition of healthcare lobbies that has launched social media campaigns attacking Medicare for All and its most high-profile proponent, Senator Bernie Sanders, while fighting narrower Democrat proposals to expand federal health coverage over concerns any change would slash hospital revenue. So that's created a dilemma for Medicare for All champions, who cast themselves as crusaders against a broken healthcare system full of greedy insurers and drug companies, yet remain wary of taking on hospitals that rank as top employers in many congressional districts and are seen by the public as life-saving institutions. Hospitals now, the bill would all but end private insurance and regulate hospitals in a vastly different way, dramatically changing operators' business model and costing community hospitals as much as $151 billion a year. Hospitals now drive a significant share of the nation's healthcare spending, though the public doesn't see it because insurers wind up paying much of the bill. And hospitals make up for the relatively lower payments they get for Medicare and Medicaid patients by shifting some of that expense to patients with private insurance, which pays more than double Medicare rates, according to a new study that put the hospital industry on the defensive. The calculus would change dramatically under Medicare for All, which would free millions more patients to seek no-cost medical care while slashing hospitals' pay rates and putting up to 1.5 million jobs at stake. My friends, what happens when government gets involved in something is the costs go up and the supply goes down. And that is what's going to happen with healthcare if, in fact, Medicare for All goes through. And it looks like we have just a few more minutes. So I did want to let you know just a few things that's in this new big retirement bill. The House, this is from Forbes, the House passed the SECURE Act right before the Memorial Day weekend on a 417-3 vote. And it moves the biggest changes to retirement policy since 2006 to the Senate, which is going to take up their version. The frontrunner on the SECURE Act would increase tax incentives for small employers to offer retirement plans. The bill increases the tax credit for new plans. The bottom line, small employers would be more likely to offer 401k retirement plans. So this is exciting. It would allow part-time workers to participate in 401k plans. It would change the age from 70 and a half to 72, instead of having to take out annual required minimum distribution for 401k and IRA starting when you turn 70 and a half. It would eliminate prohibition on traditional IRA contributions for those 70 and a half, and the older workers would be able to keep saving in the traditional IRA. Required inherited IRAs to be depleted within 10 years, and this is the provision that would pay for virtually everything else, bringing in an estimated $15.7 billion to the Treasury over 10 years, will upend estate planning. I'm not sure what I think about that yet. And it would allow penalty-free withdrawals from retirement plans for parents. Within a year after a birth or adoption, new parents could take up to $5,000 from a 401k or IRA or other qualified retirement plan. And, you know, I think this would really help folks with new babies. And it does open the door for annuities. Employers who select annuity providers would be protected from lawsuits. And workers would be able to move annuities from one place plan to another. And workers will have to watch out for risks and costs. So basically, that's it. I think we have just one other little thing that we can put on your radar, and that is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has joined the war on cauliflower. This is from the National Review. Louisiana State Legislature is contemplating legislation that would bar makers of cauliflower rice from labeling their product rice, contending that consumers will get confused. Instead, the rice growers want the product labeled riced cauliflower. But Louisiana isn't the only spot where cauliflower is under fire. In a stream of consciousness discussion of composting, the Green New Deal, and community gardens, Congresswoman woman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez lamented cauliflower as a symbol of colonialism. She says, looks like they got composting going on, which is so awesome, too, because composting is really hard to do in a neighborhood like this. We just don't have to pick up and ease of that like other communities have. So that's really how you have to do it, right? That is such a core component of the Green New Deal, is having all these projects make sense in a cultural context. And it's an area that I, Alexandria Cortez, gets the most pushback on, because people say, like, why do you need to do that? That's too hard. But when you really think of it, when someone says that it's hard to do a green space that grows yucca instead of, I don't know, cauliflower or something, what you're doing is you're taking a colonial approach to environmentalism. And that is why a lot of communities of color get resistant to certain environmentalist movements. And so anyway, that's what Ocasio-Cortez had to say about that. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we will be talking with Heather Laudenpera. She is a mother who is very concerned about forced vaccinations of our children. We had quite a to-do out here in Colorado with that. And so we're going to go to break. This is Kim Munson with the AmeriChicks radio show. Be sure and check out my website, AmeriChicks.com. For my emails. It is truly an honor to be sitting in here for Karen Cataline and her show Spouting Off. And I will go to break. Should be back in just a moment.
Do you have a secret that's been bothering you? Have you been wondering if what you're thinking or feeling is normal? Is there someone with whom you've needed to clear the air, but you haven't been able to find the right words? Sometimes you need an objective, second opinion to help you see your problem more clearly. Ask Aunt Emma, and she'll help you move past what's getting in your way. She's a former therapist who is wise and caring, but instead of therapy, she'll give you terrific advice. It's free to ask Aunt Emma and explain your need, problem, or question. If you both agree, you pay only $1.39 a minute. It's anonymous, it's confidential, and you'll be surprised at how effective it is. You can ask Aunt Emma by going to facebook.com/askAuntEmma. There, you'll find her phone number and extension number. That's facebook.com/askAuntEmma. Ask Aunt Emma today.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. It's a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. You choose your doctor and hospital, starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all kids. For more info, visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
This is Karen Cataline, host and producer of Spouting Off. Got an opinion, a guest suggestion, or a show tip? Follow me on Facebook or Twitter and let me know your thoughts. All you need is to know how to spell my name. It's the same on Twitter, Facebook, and www.karencataline.com. Karen is spelled the normal way, no goofy Y's or Q's, K-A-R-E-N. And Cataline is spelled K-A-T-A-L-I-N-E. Want more Spouting Off? You can find the complete archive of Spouting Off shows at www.karencataline.com. All my op-eds and blog posts are there too. That's www.karencataline.com. Thanks for listening. And if you have a moment, please spread the word about Spouting Off.
Okay. Hey, welcome back to the Karen Cataline Spouting Off Show. And I am Kim Munson with the AmeriChicks Radio Show. I have a couple of radio shows out in Colorado. One is Monday through Friday, where I dissect issues as right versus wrong instead of right versus left, agree or disagree. Let's have a conversation, offering you a conservatarian perspective. And the other show is my World War II project, which precipitated from a trip that I took in 2016 with a group that took four D-Day veterans back to Normandy for the D-Day celebrations. And we returned back realizing that we needed to capture these stories. So be sure and check out my website, AmeriChicks.com. Sign up for my emails, and I'll keep you apprised of all of our upcoming guests, topics, and important events. I have on the line with me a new friend of mine, Heather Lauden-Para. She is a mother out here in Colorado who was very concerned and brought to my attention some legislation that had been proposed regarding a forced vaccination bill out here in Colorado. So, Heather Lauden-Para, it is great to have you on the line.
Kim, thanks for having me today.
Well, absolutely. And we became, I think, kind of warrior friends in a way because you had brought attention to this very concerning forced vaccination bill here in Colorado. But we're also seeing forced vaccination legislation being proposed at the national level as well. Why are you so concerned about this, Heather Lauden-Para?
Well, Kim, I have been looking at this issue for many years now. When I first had my children many years ago, I was surprised to find out that a Hep B shot was recommended on the day of birth. And so I started looking into vaccinations more. And what I've found that I think most people don't realize is that the vaccination schedule has exploded in the last 30 years. And, you know, people say, well, I vaccinated my kids and they're fine and I was vaccinated. But just to give you some context, in the 60s and early 70s, when I was vaccinated, there were a total of 11 shots given by the time a child graduated from high school. And 10 of those were given before age 6. Jump to the present time, and we have on the recommended schedule about 53 shots, 55 to 56, if we count shots given in pregnancy. 36 of those recommended shots are given by the time a child is 6 years old. So there is some historical significance to this because of what happened in the late 70s and early 80s when parents were suing vaccine manufacturers for injuries from vaccines to their children. And the pharmaceutical companies were losing so much money that they said to the federal government, we're going to stop making vaccines. So there were manufacturers that were threatening to stop making vaccines. They said it just wasn't a profitable business for them. They were being sued. They were losing money. And so in 1986, there was a law passed called the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act. And that removed the liability from the pharmaceutical companies. And it put the liability into the hands of the government. But at the same time as putting the liability in the hands of the government, meaning that if a child or a grown-up was injured by a vaccine, they had to go to a federal vaccine court now instead of suing the manufacturer, the safety of vaccines was also put into the hands of the government, the CDC. All of these things are under the umbrella of HHS. And so after this 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, we saw an explosion in the schedule. And if you'd let me, I'll tell you a little bit about how that went. Is that all right, Kim?
Absolutely. Please do, Heather Lauden-Para.
So in the 40s, there were two vaccines. There were smallpox and DPT. In the 50s, they added polio. And in the 60s, they added measles, mumps, and rubella. And in the 70s, they came up with the combination shot, the MMR, the first MMR. And so that schedule, and then smallpox was taken out of the schedule in the late 60s and early 70s. So that vaccination schedule from the 40s to the 70s did not grow very much. But after 1986, this is what happened. In 1989, a second MMR shot was added, which added one more shot, and also the Hib vaccine was added, which added three more shots. In 1994, Hep B was added, added three more shots. 1996, varicella, two more shots. 98, rotavirus, two more shots. 2000, Hep A, two more shots. 2001, pneumococcal, four more shots. 2002, flu, which added about 18 shots. It's a yearly shot with two when a child's a baby. 2007, HPV, three more shots. Then in 2011, we saw a court case at the Supreme Court, which strengthened even further pharma's no-fault position. And in 2012, we saw two different shots added for pregnancy. So the flu and Tdap was added for pregnancy. And then in 2014, we had two shots added, meningococcal, and brings us to that current schedule that I talked about. So I think that illustrates just how quickly these shots have been added. So this year in Colorado, I'll talk about Colorado because that's where we're from, and this is typical of what we're seeing across the country. There are some states that lost their exemption rights this year, so I'll talk a little bit about exemption rights. So the immunization information has always been between a doctor and the patient, and then if a child is attending school, between the parent and the school. And if there's an outbreak and a child is not vaccinated, then the school notifies the parents, and the parents keep the children home after this outbreak, if there's an outbreak. And so because of the measles hype that's been really pushed through the media this year, there have, and these past few years, there's been this call for mandatory vaccinations, because they're saying that unvaccinated children are the reason that these measles viruses have spread. And that's a whole other topic.
And Heather, mm-hmm. You know, just a note on it, in our conversations on this, many of these cases that we're hearing about are in New York area, mm-hmm. and many of those are from immigrants from the Philippines and Ukraine primarily. And
right. All cases of measles have originated, that have been brought to this country, have been brought into this country from another country. There's been no, they've been spread to our citizens, but there has been no case that has arisen out of the United States as the primary case. That's right.
Okay, thank you. Thank mm-hmm. you for clarifying that.
Yeah.
So you were talking about the exemptions.
Right. So there's always been a number of students who are exempted from vaccines, often from a parent seeing a reaction in that child and then saying, I don't want to take that risk again. And so even to use an exemption to, let's say, out of these 53 recommended shots, in Colorado, we actually, different states require different shots for school. So some states require more than others. In Colorado, we actually require 21 shots by the time a child finishes high school. So for example, the varicella or chickenpox vaccine, that's probably one of the most exempted vaccines, because a lot of parents want to have their children get the chicken pox like they did and then be immune to it the rest of their lives, instead of just adding more vaccines to this child's body. So even to exempt from that one vaccine, a parent has to file an exemption with the school. That's always how it's been. So the school knows which children have which vaccines. So what is happening in this country, in the various states, is there's a push to end all personal and religious exemptions. Religious exemptions, there's some controversial ingredients in some of the vaccines that religious people do not want to inject into their children. Personal beliefs encompass, you know, parents' research, and if they feel that this many vaccines is not going to be beneficial for their child, or they feel the efficacy is not a good right for their child, they'll opt out of some vaccines, and so that's the personal. So the personal and religious have come under attack. In Colorado, a representative from Colorado, Kyle Mulica, at the beginning of our legislative session, indicated that he would be running a bill to remove the personal and the religious vaccinations from parents in Colorado. And he called a listening session. And with 24 hours notice, over 350 parents filled a room, went out into the hallways, and he had a discussion with parents. And it was very clear that parents in Colorado did not want to lose the ability to exempt from their from vaccines if they felt it was necessary for their children. So later on in the session, very late in the session, he came in with another bill. And this bill was equally as troubling. It did several things. Number one, it was wanted to narrow the medical exemption to very, very narrow guidelines that are ACIP, which is the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, which is under the CDC, to their contraindication guidelines, which is basically an anaphylactic reaction to a vaccine. And that's an immunocompromised child who's going through chemotherapy, for example. But once they're finished with that, then that would no longer be an exemption. So he wanted to narrow these exemptions for medical to this very narrow guideline, and many children in the state risked losing valid medical exemptions. They wanted then for the Board of Health in Colorado to approve those medical exemptions that would have gone through the Board of Health, taking away all physician autonomy and patient-physician relationship and understanding. So basically saying, this faceless government agency knows what's right for your child more than your physician, number one. Number two, instead of taking away the religious and personal exemptions, this bill wanted parents to go in person to the health department, say, may I please have a vaccine exemption? They would take all of that child's personal data, personally identifying information, and then issue a certificate of exemption that the parent could then take and give to their school. And that would have bypassed a law called FERPA, which is an Educational Privacy Act, where the educational record is between the school and the parent, and it would give this information up to the health department, which was really disturbing for parents to think of their children being on a government registry.
Well, one other thing that I recall on that was that when a person, so here you've got busy parents, busy families, mm-hmm. and in order to get this exemption, that, you know, each child is individual, but to get this exemption, you'd have to take off work or you'd have to get over to the health department. But my understanding was you would also have to sign something that would say, that you would say, I know that I'm putting my child at risk.
Well, yes. So a few years ago, so this has already been done in the state of Colorado. We've been through all of this before very recently. So a couple years ago, there was a HB 1164, and that was the health department was going to try to require forms for parents to fill out. They wanted it to be mandatory that you had to do it through the health department, and that law didn't pass, but they made these forms anyway. And then they tried to tell parents that they had to use these forms, and they tried to tell schools that parents had to use the forms, and then they tried to tell schools that parents had to do it through the health department online, and parents kept fighting. It was a whole year, literally, that parents were going to the schools, having meetings with the school nurses, writing to the superintendents, and finally a statement was written by, at that time it was Larry Wolk, who was the head of CDPHE, our health department, sent it to the superintendents and said, you know, parents can go through the health department, but they don't have to, and they don't have to use the form. But these forms had, yes, compelled speech on them. I know I'm putting my child at risk. I understand it only had the benefits of vaccines, no risk information, and then parents were required to sign that if they use the form. So parents were very concerned about this year. Now, there was an amendment put in that said there wouldn't be any compelled speech on the form if it would have passed. However, there was going to be only benefit information in the form, benefits of vaccinations, no risks. It also wanted educational material at doctor's offices and in the health department with only the benefits of vaccines and no risk.
Astonishing.
And so that's what's happening when parents are going to the doctor anyway. They're not getting real risk information, not real informed consent. I was going to say the final thing that this bill wanted to do was add 29 more shots to the required schedule in Colorado. So instead of having our required vaccines that have gone through the stakeholder process in our state, it would have added 29 more shots to the required schedule for school, forcing the state to adopt the full ACIP recommended schedule that I talked to you about that has those 53 shots on it. And so instead of decreasing exemption rates, which was the stated intent of the bill, of course it would have increased exemption rates because the HPV, which is very controversial, and the flu shot have about a 50% uptake with children. And so there would have been a whole slew of kids not up to date when they entered school had that bill, had that law passed this year.
Well, and Heather, this is faceless, nameless bureaucrats that are mandating this, and they could add additional vaccinations on, and there's no accountability for big, you know, for the pharmaceutical companies on it. And I do appreciate research and development that they do, but once you get rid of freedom and you put in force, you take away the accountability. And that's one of the things that we're really concerned about. Now, we're going to be getting very low on time here.
Okay.
But it's good. This is not pro-vax and anti-vax. Explain that just a little bit.
Well, so I think that what's happening in the media is that there's this narrative being fueled, anti-vaxxers, pro-vaxxers. I know a lot of people concerned about this, and I know very few people. I do know a few people who don't vaccinate their children at all, but I would say that that is a very small minority, and the reason I know that is because I try to fight against this type of legislation. Most people I know who are using exemptions have seen their children harmed after a vaccine and don't want to take a risk, a further risk on that. But the other thing is there's people that have fully vaccinated children and that are saying, oh my gosh, if this something like this passes, and we look at the trend of every 2 to 3 years having a new vaccine added to the schedule, the only consumer protection we have, the absolute only consumer protection we have right now against pharmaceutical companies is the exemption. If there are mandates and our children can't go to school if we opt out of one of these 53 vaccines, then there is no consumer protection. There's nothing left. And how many is going to be too many? Is 100 shots going to be too many when parents finally say, oh my gosh, how did we let this happen? You know, what is, when, just because we can doesn't mean we should. So just because we can make a vaccine for whatever, does it mean that we should keep adding them?
Enforcing. That's the question. Freedom
them.
And force.
That's
freedom
right.
And force.
And they're a medical procedure that comes with risks. And our whole medical relationship with doctors is based on informed consent, which means that they tell you the risk and the benefit and that you are allowed to decide what is right for you and your body and your children by an extension.
Well, I've gotten my brain around this, I am so concerned because anytime there's this freedom versus force, and then we're seeing, you know, there's this is across the political spectrum. It's Democrats, unaffiliated Republicans. It's really been conservative Republicans that have taken up the mantle in pushing back on this, though. When I went down to the State House that one night, you had what? There was over 500 people there wanted to testify.
Yes.
And the radical activists, you don't have to agree, but the chair of that particular committee shut down the voices of myriads of parents that wanted to speak.
Yes.
And I was just astonished at that. And it was actually three Republican senators that I thought really took the mantle in trying to protect these families. And again, they're across the political spectrum from Democrats, you know, all the way across that spectrum. And I had people thanking me for coming out and taking a stand on that because this whole freedom versus force thing is a lot. I'm really concerned about it, Heather.
I am too. And one thing we have to remember when we're talking about the pharmaceutical companies, their lobby is the biggest lobby in the entire country. They pay twice as much in lobbying as oil and gas. Their healthcare is our biggest industry. Sick people make money. And And the vaccinations are liability-free for pharmaceutical companies. So, of course, mandates are going to benefit them. I feel like we've reached a point where we're no longer looking out for the best interest of children. The best interest of the pharmaceutical companies is what it seems to be is being looked out for. And that's not okay.
Well, yeah, and when you went through this complete schedule here, you know, somebody pays for those vaccinations. Now, families will do that, but yet people that are on public assistance, the taxpayer would be paying for that. The pharmaceutical company, you know, makes money. So instead of them having to make the case, you know, in a free market where they develop a vaccine that they say to the doctor talks with the parent, this is the benefits, this is the risk, what do you think we should do? Instead, you have that force component, and then you just see government grows and grows and grows.
Yes, and we had somebody do some analysis on the fiscal analysis, and it looks like if vaccines are mandated, like if we suddenly adopted this new schedule in Colorado, healthcare premiums are at risk of going up as well, because the healthcare, the private health insurance needs to pay for those mandated vaccines as well, and the vaccines for children's program, which is also, you know, a federally funded program, then yes, it's a cost benefit analysis in many ways. And you know, it's very troubling and for across many, you know, for many reasons.
Well, and Heather, we're getting low on time here, but what happened in Colorado was absolutely astonishing. As parents, they had their little ones down at the state house till there was one night that I think you didn't get home till 3:30 in the morning. But you and these other parents were there making your voices heard. And so this legislation did not pass in Colorado this year.
That's right.
But we're seeing them, Adam Schiff is trying to bring this forward on the national level, which once again, we should be really concerned about it. So what is kind of the final thought that you'd like to leave with our listeners on the Karen Cattaleen Show today?
Well, I think people need to research this a little bit because this is something that will affect everyone. Once children, if children get their vaccines mandated, adults will have mandated vaccines next. And these are our bodies. If the government can tell us what to do with our bodies, we have lost our freedom. Our body autonomy is our greatest freedom that we must make sure we never lose. And it is important. We are seeing, there's a resolution in the federal government by Adam Schiff. This is becoming a big issue. And if people want to be able to make their own healthcare decisions and not have a faceless government agency telling them how to take care of their own body, this is a very, very important issue to get involved in. And you need to contact your legislators, both federally and statewide, and talk to them about why you're concerned, and especially people who are older and who maybe don't have children, who think they don't have any skin in the game. They need to think about their grandchildren, and they need to stand up. We need people to stand up now and say no. It's crucial.
Well, it is crucial. And once again, it's the question as we look at freedom versus force. And you're talking in the essence of property rights regarding you know, our bodies and our property rights. I do just want to make a comment, though, and that is regarding this whole abortion question over there, is that a young millennial said, since when does a woman have two hearts? So I'm pushing that abortion question over to the side and moving that over there and then saying, yes, we should have, you know, the property rights of our bodies, that we should be able to make the choices for that. And, of course, parents are best suited to make the choices regarding this vaccination schedule in consultation with their doctor.
Absolutely.
And one other thing that you mentioned, and that was the Colorado law was going to mandate that the benefits of vaccinations would be explained to parents, but the risk would not. And this is scary stuff when that happens, Heather.
Yes, it's very scary because vaccines, although they are not categorized as drugs, they're categorized as biologics so that they can be fast-tracked and they don't have to go through the same safety and testing as regular drugs do. They can be only tested for a couple days to a couple weeks, whereas drugs are tested for years. But they are a medical product, and we know that medical products have side effects. And not all people respond to things the same way. I'm allergic to penicillin. Would we mandate that everyone has to take penicillin if they have an infection, that they must use that drug? Or, you know, people have food allergies, we know. So to say that there's this one-size-fits-all amazing product that has no side effects is a fairy tale.
It's just disingenuous, isn't it?
Yes.
It's totally disingenuous. And the one other thing I think that we will leave our listeners with is what you just said here, is vaccinations do not have to go through that long process for testing. So in essence, these different pieces of legislation would put in place legislation that additional vaccinations could be added to the schedule into the future by these nameless, faceless bureaucrats, and you would be forced to adhere to that. And my friends, that should not be happening in the United States of America. So Heather Lauden-Para, thank you so much.
Thank you, Kim. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, absolutely. So it's been a real honor to get to do this show for Karen Cataline. I know that she's having a great time, and she'll be back here next week. One of the things that I like to do is to end my show with a quote. And so today, Alexander Hamilton, he said, "In politics, as in religion, it is equally absurd to aim at making proselytes by fire and sword. Heresies in either can rarely be cured by persecution." So calm, reasonable voices, understanding what the issues are, and being able to talk to our friends, our family, and our colleagues about this is so important. And that's why Karen's great work with Spouting Off is so great for you guys to listen, to get your brain around these important issues. She does a super job. So in closing today, my recommendation for life is read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson with the AmeriChick signing off for Karen Cataline. God bless you, and God bless America.